How's it going out there? Welcome, 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 welcome. Thanks for joining us into this this nice week. Hope you guys are having a good time. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
And yes, we can't smile without you. We are, in fact, the Carolyn and Joe Show. I can't smile without you.
All of the listeners are our BFFs.
Probably yours, but they probably just hate me like everyone else in this world. How's it going, Carolyn?
I'm feeling extremely happy.
So just before the show starts, you might as well just tell a not whimsical, but just tell a real story about why we're playing this song. Where does it come from? All of a sudden, there's always a story behind every song we start with, but this one officially has a story or has some sort of memory now.
It started out because we watched Hellboy 2.
Hellboy 2, 2008's Hellboy 2.
2008.
Del Toro's Hellboy 2.
I think from watching Pacific Rim, that made everybody want to reinvestigate Del Toro and see the other films that he made.
Was it everyone? I hope so.
Well, I think so. You know, I can't speak for everybody. I know for me, though, we're like, oh, let's watch more Del Toro. Because at this point, I know I have seen Pan's Labyrinth. What other Del Toros has I seen?
I have no idea, actually. I think that's it. You saw Blade. You saw Blade 2.
I also saw Blade 2 yesterday. So that's a recent development.
That's all the Guillermo del Toro stuff that you've seen. I think that's about it.
Well,
you've seen like Mimic and like the other Spanish ones.
I know I haven't seen any of those.
Kronos.
But I know he's like big on the creature making.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought he had another movie in addition to Pan's Labyrinth. Like in that that was more like monster and fantasy based.
It's pretty much everything is monster fantasy based. Oh,
no, but I thought there was like something similar to Pan's.
But it is about that time. We'll jump into that once again. But it's time for Carolyn's news. Kick it, Carolyn.
News. Carolyn's news. All right. If you haven't already, please check out the cartoons exhibit. It's at Politics and Prose in Washington, D.C. It's in the coffee shop downstairs. So check that out because that runs this whole month of August 2013. And we're also going to be in the Artisphere exhibit. More details on that to come. Or you can check out curls-studio.com for the announcement.
What date is that, though? I remember seeing a date.
Gotta check out curls-studio.com.
You just gotta go check out that.
Whenever that gets announced.
Curls-studio. Curls-studio.com. Google it if you could.
Google it. And we have a whole bunch of awesome tour coming up in the fall because it's actually approaching the fall. I found a red leaf today. I found a red leaf today. You know? And
you're like, there it is.
I was like,
summer is dying.
I was like, that's a sign of autumn.
This is the sign of the death of summer. A red leaf.
The Hellboy leaf.
Mark of
the Hellboy leaf.
That's right.
And so that really. I smelt it in the air. I was like, this is the smell of Small Press Expo is coming up in the air.
Yeah.
So Baltimore Comic Con is coming up. Small Press Expo is coming up. New York Comic Con is coming up.
And we're part of all those.
All three
we're
going to
be all those. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to be amazing. And there's good things coming up in the future. We just got to wait until the fall for more specific announcements. But we hope to see you. Like, you can already make plans to go to Small Press Expo or Baltimore Comic Con or New York Comic Con to see us.
Who happen to be all pretty much close to each other anyway.
And Southern Maryland Comic Con.
Yeah.
And there's also another event in Maryland that we're going to be at. So check curls-studio.com. We're going to be taking over Maryland and taking over all of the
East Coast
America.
Northeast.
We'll see you.
ECW territory. We're taking it all.
We're taking it. We're eating it like a cookie.
Yes.
And then, like, the continents will have to be shaped differently.
Exactly.
And they have to make a new globe because of Curl Studio.
That's right. Or we just extend the globe outward.
Yeah. It'll be a whole new world after Curl Studio takes over.
And also, just so people know, probably by the time you guys hear this, well, you listen to this and you download it off of Stitcher or you check it out on the CarolynandJoeShow.com, wherever you find out about
iTunes.
This, whatever time you do, by the time you are listening to our voices at this very moment, yes, the Taboo Girls 2014 calendar will be finished production of finished principal photography, basically. And yes, I did shoot this whole entire one, and there's going to be a very lack of clothing on this one, if that interests any of you guys out there. So definitely be on the lookout for that Of course, tabulicious.com, however you want to spell it. Just Google it. You can just Google anything. Spelling doesn't matter anymore. But yeah, I photographed again every single day, and the cover, the whole thing. Me and Allison, the owner of Taboo, put our brains together and conceptualized every single one of these images. So go out there. Look for it. It's going to be great. Last one sold out, so all of you guys got to hurry up and get this one. Exclusives.
Did you just hijack the news?
I just hijacked the news. This hijacked the news was by Joe Carabello. What else you got, Carolyn?
Check out carl7studio.com for all the details.
All the details on everything.
On everything that's coming to be announced.
Why do they have to tune in to curls-studio.com if we're listening to the Carolyn's news now?
Well, because some news might be announced later. That's where you get the latest.
That's where you get the absolute.
See, sometimes you get breaking news on the Carolyn news segment of the Carolyn and Joe show.
That's true.
But other times, it might get announced on the blog. There's so many different outlets. Sometimes it might get announced on Twitter first. That's why it pays to cover all of it. It pays to listen to the radio show. It pays to be on Facebook, and it pays to be on Twitter. Yes. You never know when any of the announcements will be made.
It's amazing because, you know, this day and age, everyone has supposedly a podcast that they do for like 10 weeks or so. Then everyone has a comic strip. Everyone has something or other.
But how many weeks have we been doing the Carolyn and Joe
show? We've been doing the Carolyn and Joe show for... Let me double check this.
I
had the number in my head, but I believe we're at 237 at this point.
Oh my goodness.
Let me turn on the dreaded internet and find out the exact number of weeks here.
So
from the last week.
I was thinking about the internet this week and the www part of it. I know it stands for World Wide Web. But then part of me was like, man, what if it stands for Wild Wild West?
So officially officially, this would be 238. This is our 238th week, straight week.
Happy birthday.
200 straight week. Yes, happy weekly birthday.
Happy 238th birthday.
That's right. So to continue the story about you finding out about Hellboy, because you enjoyed, one thing, I guess you enjoyed like Pacific Rim, but after Pacific Rim, were you really just like, let's go look at more Del Toro films? Or was it just like, hey man, let's watch... Because I remember there was a time where I was just like, I was totally into a Del Toro thing because I felt he did a fantastic job with Pacific Rim. And I was like, that was almost just like something I needed. Something that wasn't like, oh, let's be super serious. We need to get to the matter of things and be that guy and be that type of person. Everyone wants to assume they're super serious. But he actually zigged when people zagged. You know, he was like, I'm not going to make something like soulless, so to speak, and just like, you know, lack of fun. He created something that used to be around, that used to be a pleasure and still is a pleasure, but people seem to be afraid to make that with the Pacific Rim. So that made me personally think like, hey, I need to go back and get Hellboy. And I was like looking through the collection and wondering, what do I have of Del Toro? I was like, I swear I have all of them. And then I realized I didn't. I just had Hellboy 2. And I remember watching Hellboy 2. And then that's where I was like, Carolyn, we need to watch Hellboy 2. Then what happened?
And that's when I was like, how come I have not watched this? And then I asked you if you've already watched it, and you said, yeah, you already watched it. And I said, when did you watch this? And then you said, when did you watch it? When it came out?
I mean, I watched it because if you think about when Hellboy 2 came out, again, it was almost the same. I feel like it's the same situation, again, of what happened with Pacific Rim. Because this year, 2013, you have the Man of Steel, which is another serious film by DC Comics, a serious take on the superhero with Man of Steel with the Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder, right? And then of course Guillermo del Toro comes out with the film called Pacific Rim that again is another fun, super straight, like real block, but like summer style film, popcorn style, like... not popcorn bullshit, but like real entertaining and also. Like also with substance and something, you know, something
yeah,
that's
it was
multidimensional.
Like an entertaining movie that wasn't serious, that was, as serious.
Yeah, like it's good about it's serious about its not seriousness, but it's fun and it's, you know, that being a kid again. But the thing is though, so Superman came out and then Pacific Rim came out, but then also back when Hellboy 2 came out, that same time, guess what came out a week afterwards?
I don't know.
The Dark Knight. So you sort of have like this sort of mirror thing.
Which Dark Knight? The Heath Ledger?
There's only one Dark Knight.
The Heath Ledger one?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no other Dark Knight there. There's only just Dark Knight.
What's the third one?
The Dark Knight Rises.
Well, that is a Dark Knight.
No, but this is the Dark Knight, and it was several years ago, and then...
Oh.
It's not the same one.
So there's the Dark Knight and the Dark
so
Knight Rises.
So in 2008, again, Guillermo del Toro comes out with the film, and then another serious DC comic movie came out. So it's like it happened again, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and so you're like, let's watch Hellboy 2, and I was like, okay.
No, you weren't. You're like, we need to watch Hellboy 1. And I was like, I don't have Hellboy 1.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Correction.
And I was searching forever.
I was like, oh, I need to watch Hellboy 1 before I watch Hellboy 2. And then you didn't have Hellboy 1. And then I said, oh, is it okay if I watch Hellboy 2 without watching Hellboy 1? And then you said, yeah, it's okay. So then
I want to watch Hellboy 1 first.
Yeah.
And then like then I was like, well, I guess we got to go find Hellboy 1.
And
to watch
we,
that thing.
And then we tried to find Hellboy 1. And
well, I tried looking for it everywhere, like in person, to actually find a movie in person.
It was not at Best Buy. It was not at Target. It was not at Walmart. I don't know where else we checked. And but we checked like several of those stores.
And that was one of those situations where it's like, you know, you've seen it like in the store before with your own eyes. And you're like, why is it not here? It should be here. Why do they have Blade 1 here, but they don't have Hellboy 1?
No, they only had Blade 2.
I mean, like at Best Buy and stuff like that. And then, like, we were digging into, like, the $7.99 Blu-rays starting at $7.99, seeing if it's something, if Hellboy 1 was there, but it's not there either.
They only had Hellboy 2 in one of the bins.
Yeah, so, like, I was like, well, we already have Blu-ray Hellboy 2.
And so now I ordered Hellboy 1 on Amazon, and it's supposed to come on Tuesday.
Well, see, that was the thing, is though, at that time, we didn't have the Hellboy 1. We specifically just had, you wouldn't even have Blade or any of those things. We're like, I guess.
So later tonight, I'm going to get Hellboy 1.
But basically, it took a while to even like approach the Hellboy 2. Because when I watched Hellboy 2, I was like, when I remember watching it, I was like, you don't really need the first one. It's not so detrimental of like watching like the original first one. That's just sort of the intro of the character. So I was like, we need to get into it. So finally, after 2 weeks, after 2 weeks of that,
searching and hunting.
And then Hellboy 2 finally came into play in the Blu-ray.
Yeah, and so we watched it. And I didn't really have any expectations for some reason. Like, I knew, like, Del Toro would have a lot of creatures and effects and really, really cool character designs. I knew that that was coming and that was expected. But what wasn't expected was, I've never actually even read Hellboy. But I've seen Mike Mignola, like, in person at Small Press Expo before. And, like, Hellboy always, like, I guess, I'm familiar with Mike Mignola's style of art, and I never was ever, like, against it or anything. I just never was exposed to the Hellboy comic. Like, no one ever, I guess, put it in my hands directly. So, I knew that he was probably, like, some demon. Or some
Hellboy?
Some yeah, demon? Like, this is just my impressions without reading it or watching the movie. Like, and I knew that he had, like, shaved off his horn. That's all I really, I think, knew. And I knew, like, there was a Selma Blair in the movie.
There was a Selma Blair in the movie. Just one.
There was a Selma Blair. And what else did I know? I guess that's all I really know. And, so I was watching, and the thing that struck me the most... Well, first of all, we watched the movie in three segments because... One time I started getting very tired and I was like, we have to stop. I cannot continue. I was just exhausted. And then another time, like our friend came by the house, so we had to stop the movie then. So it was interrupted three times, but I felt like with each interruption, it made me like want to go back to the movie. Like I would be like, oh, and we need to continue it. Like it wasn't like you like stopped reading a book for whatever reason and then you like totally forgot about it. Have you ever had that?
Yeah.
When you're reading and you're like, oh, even if you are like halfway into it.
Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, like someone rings the doorbell or something and then you stop. Then you just like stop reading the book completely.
I always find that to be like an out. Like mentally, you're just trying to find a reason to stop.
But I've had that several times with things, even things that I've enjoyed. And like for whatever reason, it could even be a minuscule reason as much as like somebody ringing the doorbell. And then like all of a sudden everything is stopped and halted forever, even if you intended on reading that full book.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I guess mentally we could have done that with Hellboy because it's already been interrupted like twice, you know? Like mentally we could have just been, whatever, I'm never going to finish this. But usually I do try to finish movies at least more than with books. But yeah, so like, I mean, it had a lot of things against it, I feel like. But still each time...
What were the things that had against it? Just not returning and...
Yeah, like I could have easily just like fallen asleep and not seen the rest of it. You know, like, and just been like, yeah, I saw it.
You know?
Like, I could have easily done that, but instead I was like, oh, you gotta stop it. I'm exhausted now, but I wanna watch it. You know, like, we gotta stop. And then, like, even, like, interruption with the friend, it's like, well, we could have just forgotten about it and, like, never watched the rest of it. I mean, that could have happened.
Yeah.
But it didn't. Like, we still wanted to continue with it.
I mean, that's happened with so many things. Like, we never finished Pushing Daisies. There's always lots of interruptions that happen.
That's what I'm saying. Like it already had two strikes against it with the interruptions, and that's right there is a problem, I think. But like we overcame those. We overcame it to actually finish the Hellboy 2 movie. I think that's monumental. And then also,
taking in mind that Hellboy is 2 hours. Del Toro likes to just keep things 2 hours. And it's a 2-hour movie.
But the other thing is, though, in between each of those breaks, I kept thinking about it. Like, I don't know how often I really do that with things. Like, I don't know, but I was just, like, kept thinking about it.
What were you thinking about?
I was just like, man, I wonder what happens in Hellboy. And then, like, I even started wanting to read the books. And that's when, like, later today, I'm going to get my Amazon shipment because I ordered... BPRD number one. And so I'm like excited.
The big trade too, right?
Yeah, I'm excited because now I'm going to read the comic. And I also love the character Abe. Like, I think he's awesome. I love the design of him. And also one night, this is like before we even finished the movie. I think this was after interruption number one. Like, or number two. I can't remember. But it was after one of the interruptions. I don't know why, but it was like at 2 or 3 in the morning, and I just started Googling Abe Sabian and like looking at him at night. Just
admiring him.
Just seriously, I was just like admiring him like the way I do Dave Navarro.
What did you admire about Abe? Abe Sabian.
I don't know. Like,
describe people who don't know what Abe Sabian is from Hellboy.
He's like Hellboy's co-worker in the BPRD.
His co-worker.
Yeah.
Like they work at an office.
Yeah, pretty much. And the BPRD stands for Bureau of Research of Paranormal something. Do you know what the D is?
What? BPRD?
Do you know what the D stands for?
Maybe it's department.
Yeah. The Paranormal Department. Anyway.
BPRD?
Yeah, the Bureau of Paranormal... something, whatever. Anyway.
Whatever.
I like it. And so Abe is like a part of that too. And so basically I guess he would be, you know, Hellboy's coworker. But they're more than that because they have extreme abilities. And Abe, he kind of looks like a human fish. He has a blue scales and he has a texture on his skin that's kind of I guess he could be, like, in water. And he has gills on the side of his head. He's tall and thin, very thin. And he has, like, webbed hands and feet. So when he, like, stretches his hand out, there's a webs in between his fingers. And then also, I really liked how there was a comment made in Hellboy 2 where they basically get discovered by the media and by the general public.
Yeah.
And then the media is like, who is this person, or who is this creature? There, he has a toilet bowl on around his neck. And so he has this water thing around his neck that like really does kind of look like a toilet bowl.
It helps him breathe, right?
Yeah, and it helps him breathe. And then I was laughing, and I thought that was cute. And he has different types of suits. Like he has this black suit that covers most of his body, and then he has different versions of that suit. He has one that is like shorts, and another with a short sleeve shirt. He has different fashions, and it's like a black scuba diving type outfit that's like really thin on his it's directly on his skin. There's like, it's not loose at all. It's really tight on his skin.
So did you enjoy the Hellboy 2 movie? Because I guess this came at like a surprise, because you really had nothing, no idea what to expect, or even like really that much knowing about Del Toro movies. So
I thought that it would be darker, because it's like, I don't know, the title is just like Hellboy, and like a little like red,
the Golden Army,
red like Satan type character or something. Like I thought that it would be like that, but it wasn't like that at all. Like, I mean, yeah, it wasn't like flowers and rainbows, or it wasn't like super
flowers and rainbows,
you know. It wasn't like,
but there were flowers and rainbows.
Well, yeah, there was, but then there was also like an edge to it, and I thought it was humorous. Like I liked the humor a lot, the way they injected the humor with the battles.
Yeah.
And also Abe fell in love with a princess there. And I don't want to ruin the story for if you haven't seen it yet. So mostly I've been trying to be spoiler free, but like it's pretty cool about like, you know, Abe has feelings for another type of creature. So it was kind of cool in that way to like see them have emotions. It wasn't like they were there just to be like, oh, I'm a creature, you know, walking around, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like even the other creatures. I can go on talking about the other creatures, but they went in this area called the Troll Market, and they have a lot of really cool creatures in the Troll Market. But even if you see a character for like 10 seconds, it tells so much of a story behind them. Like mentally, I feel like I'm, as a viewer, know their whole story just by looking at them.
I think that was one of the greatest parts of even watching like behind the scenes. Like their whole entire over 2 hour documentary of Hellboy is that they have a whole section on like the Troll Market, basically. And like he was saying, Del Toro was saying like there's too much story in just one corner of this Troll Market that you can't even explain with a movie like this that has a plot. You know what I mean? There's so many details that you just can never reveal.
But it's pretty crazy too, because they're behind the scenes. Was more time than the actual movie. And it was almost like, sometimes I really do enjoy watching the behind the scenes more than the movie, because I like watching all the stuff that goes into it. But in a Del Toro movie, there is so much elaborate decoration and set dressing, to the point where like it's extreme and aggressive, because it's almost to the point, because you see Del Toro like sticking his hands in slime and like covering the set. You see Del Toro like carving a sculpture with clay and like helping somebody figure out how to do this character's forehead. You see Del Toro like looking in monitors helping the CG animators.
Toro is very hands-on, you know. I mean, he's constantly drawing. We saw him constantly drawing in his notebook and doing the sculpting. He's like, I want to see it like this. Can you give me a chance to do that? And like he has, even with the post animation, the CGI afterwards, he's literally like narrating on screen for the animators what he wants. You know, he's very detailed and oriented. And I feel like that's what it's all about, man.
But I like that, because like sometimes you get direction from people that they don't know what they want, or it's just like so fluff.
Yeah,
you know, they're just like, yeah.
Just make it hip.
Make it look cool. And it's like, but I don't know what you think looks cool. And then on top, because that's like subjective. But whereas like on top of it, that doesn't really like help you mentally. If somebody gives you guidance like that, it doesn't really inspire you, because like you kind of need more direction than that.
Yeah.
And because obviously that's going to be like an obvious statement. You know, wouldn't that be for like anything that you're creating? Obviously, yeah, you want to make it look cool.
Make it look cool. Make it like, look awesome.
Like, I mean, what type? I don't understand why you would not try to make it look cool, you know? So like, I mean, there might be like, you know, a time where you would try to do that. Like, let's say that there's like a nerdy character and you say like, make him not look cool. Well, there's a way to actually make him look cool, but he'll still be uncool.
Yeah. To somebody.
Yeah. Like, so I think there are like in Freaks and Geeks, there are like geeky characters.
Yeah.
And that's who they are. But, like, and they are uncool, but they are cool. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, like, the way they made them was cool. But, like, for somebody to give, like, a lack of direction, like, I've been around that a lot, and, like, it doesn't really help your motivation to, like, go beyond that, because obviously you're going to try and make things cool. But with Del Toro, it's like his direction is very spot on, you know. Like
I would say that he is definitely like, in my, you know, there's people who are, you know, they direct, but I wouldn't put them as a director or auteur or creator. Del Toro is definitely like a creator director. You know what I mean?
Well, I would
he envisions all this stuff.
That's the word I was going to say. Like basically he has a vision. And I feel like so many people might not have a clear vision, but he has a straight up clear vision of what he wants. And I think he can get the most out of people and most out of his team because he is able to encompass all that and elaborate on what he exactly needs.
Yeah. And I guess as a person, I mean, I feel like, yeah, like working in production, that's what you feed upon. It's like this guy always has ideas. And that's the one thing you'd always hear about Del Toro when, from his other crewmates, is like he has answers and he has stories for everything. You know, I mean, he has a reason for this and a reason for that, and I think that's really important because he's, what that really shows is some people, and I always found this really like ridiculous, and it's something that I feel like even when I was writing a story, like when I was going through film school, when I would, you know, approach the group or whatever, whoever's my crew at that time or something like that, or people I was working with, when I would talk about the story and I would have it so like dense and so like, yeah, this guy does this, that, and this one, that, and this. And also it's because this and that, you know, like I'd have these details. And then for some reason, I felt like a lot of times other classmates or people like that would be like, oh, Joe has too much time on his hands. You know what I mean? And be like, because basically say like, because I did all this details and all this envisioned the story, so to speak. I felt like part of it was like I was looked down upon because I was like, oh, this is all you do. He has nothing going in his life. It was like, well, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And this is what I want to do. And to see Del Toro do that, I really appreciate that.
But he, like, that, you, somebody could say that about Del Toro too, to be,
yeah,
like,
of course,
well,
yeah,
like this guy has no life because he spends 3 years of his life doing that movie.
Yeah. It's like, well, it's apparent he's not going to be an Olympian, you know what I mean? But you know what he does well, and he does
Olympian
it brilliant
of film.
Yeah, and he does it pleasantly too, and he's inspiring that way because he's filled with that honesty of what the story really needs, and that's great, you know.
It's pretty crazy though, like watching that. How long was that documentary? It was like almost 3 hours.
That was
right?
Like 2 hours and 40 minutes long.
Okay, so watching
just the documentary itself, not the marketing part. Because I heard there's other stuff on the marketing.
There's
other stuff on the marketing where it has like Hellboy show up on other TV shows and stuff like that.
What? I need to watch that. But like basically, from watching 2 hours and 40 minutes of the making of Hellboy 2, like I have realized that. Like, I always knew that making movies is hard. I always knew that, like, making good movies is hard. And making, you know, something as extreme as all the creatures in Hellboy, I know that that's, you know, not an easy thing. And you have really, like, the top experts helping you with that. But at the same time, man, like, watching his face in some of it, though, as much as you can tell he enjoys doing it, you can tell he's tired. And that is exhausting. Because he was, like, helping with every little minute detail. And you know, on one hand, I guess somebody might be like, oh, he's too hands-on, or like, oh, he knows exactly what he wants, so he won't let me elaborate on my own ideas. But I don't feel like that, at least from the footage that I saw on the documentary, because I felt like he still gave people an outlet to inject their own expression in there, you know, like he would, yeah, give direction, but, and it was be specific, but it felt like people were able to also inject a suggestion of what they would consider, you know, along those same lines.
And it's interesting because like when I see him talking about how to start coming about creating characters, the one thing I always found, and I never even tried this before, he was like, I want them to have a good silhouette. Yeah, I want, yeah, them to have a unique silhouette. And I've like never gone at things before like that. It's like, oh, I want this creature to have a cool silhouette, and then you build around that. It's like it's hard for me to even fathom that, but I sort of understand like the awesomeness of a silhouette.
Yeah.
Now I do. He sort of opened my eyes towards that. But also the one thing that I loved about his direction to his collaborators was Del Toro basically saying like, forget about the, like what's come before this. Like anything that's don't be inspired by stuff that's already been done. Like a troll isn't what trolls are supposed to look like. Just you honestly start and envision your idea of what a troll is or what this is supposed to be. And I think that's cool because he's pushing through. Because I saw him do that as well with Pacific Rim. He was like, forget about don't bring any inspiration that's already been done. We need to start from the scratch. You know what I mean? We need to make this ours.
Another cool thing from the documentary was thinking about how some of the creature actors that were inside the suits, like the guy who played the bad prince,
yeah,
with the blonde hair, that yeah. dude, he how many hours was he in there? He was on makeup at like 4 a.m. or something crazy like that, and he was in makeup for like 8 hours before he even started work.
I think it was like four to five, but the max 8 hours when they first started.
Oh, when they first started, like they were, I guess, like still experimenting with his look.
Yeah, and I feel like when they first, you know, because you get faster throughout the shoot, but also like if they have to do the full body stuff.
Yeah, so like imagine like some, you know, most people's work day is 8 hours. But his was, in the start of it, 8 hours just doing makeup and wardrobe.
I mean, that's what a lot of people like need to realize about like a film set as well. Is like that's a 14-hour day. People are like, it's so glamorous.
But I mean,
it is glamorous because we got to keep the magic real, but it's also it's work. And I don't like when people are just like, dude, don't mention it as work. But like, what's wrong with saying it's work? Work is a good thing. Also, getting shit done is good.
And also the other thing was the stunt choreography. There were some crazy moves. Like they had this
one of the choreographers. It was one of the right hand guys of Jackie Chan too.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this one guy, they got a world class tumbler guy.
Oh yeah, they're like, so yeah, we got a world class tumbler to do this one scene. That's like a world champion tumbler.
Yeah, and honestly, like I was like, oh, this guy is probably like, there's probably only less than 5 people in the whole world that can do this move.
Yeah.
Like it was just like endless tumbling. For 10 seconds of just like 10 flips, like back flips down like a aisle way. I don't know, man. That's like, that gets really technical and like really precise. Real precise.
Well, it looked amazing though when it came out.
Oh, definitely. But there's like so many things. I mean, it's one of those things that I already know what goes into movie, like, oh, you know, sound and, you know, fashion design and like sometimes creature design, special effects, you know, all these things go into movie. But the way that they presented that, it really made me think that this is like testing the human condition. Like how many hours can somebody stay in makeup and then work after that? Or how many flips can this guy do?
And I look at these people as like real actors too, because there's a lot of people who are like claim to be actors or they act, but they're not really willing to take it that far to be like, to almost like, in a way, not, I would say almost like ugly themselves up, but how far they would go for the character. And I feel that's the dividing line of like, say, just like some prissy person being like, oh, I'm acting, and they want to just look beautiful all the time.
And several of the characters, they actually could not see. Or they could not speak as well. Like
that was one of the great things during that meeting.
Remember
Del Toro's like, he was talking in that meeting when they were talking about like the last final battle scenes, and they were doing a pre-production on that. And Del Toro was talking about like, and we just found out several weeks that like pretty much every single character, every single actor we have, except for Selma has a problem. Like, we have actors who can't see, actors who are blind, who can't reach anything, stuff like that.
He was just like, this one's blind and deaf.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, they actually can't even hear inside their suits. So if they're given direction, it's going to be hard to, like, tell them how to point. Plus, they can't see if they have to pick up a prop.
I thought that was one of my favorite parts about that. It's like, that's one of the things. Because, like, also at the same time, apparently it was cheaper for them to make those costumes than CGI. But also making practical costumes, it brings that life, and you're able to like interact as opposed to CGI character.
And also the mechanicals was pretty impressive too, like knowing that there can be a guy off to the side off camera with a remote control that can move around somebody's fingers.
That blows my mind. Like those animatronics that, yeah. I don't even know. There's certain things in this world that I can't even fathom. Like, I'd like to think that if I put my mind to it, I can do anything I want. You know what I mean? And then there's stuff where I'm just like, I don't even know how you begin to do it. When like these guys make these animatronics or these robots, like remember when they do the angel of death, and he has a wingspan, and they're talking about how, he's like, oh yeah, and I just made my own software that can just open up the wings by itself. I was like, you just made your own software? That stuff like just blows my mind. It's like, oh, I'm just making robots and stuff like that. I was like, wow, man, that's something. That's what I feel like impresses me, where it's something I feel like I cannot, like, I feel like it's almost out of my grasp of achieving. It's like stuff like that. It's like, you know, when I see work, I'm just like not impressed. It's because I feel like I can do it. But I'm impressed when I'm like, man, I can't even do that shit. You know what I mean? I'm like, that dude just made a freaking hand move through a controller. I'm like, how do you even do that? I want to learn to do that.
And also not even just like think like, I mean, that is pretty impressive to have a hand mover, to have like an angel's wings flare out. But on top of that, like, there were some of the animatronics that was just, like, very subtle movements in someone's face.
Yeah.
Like an eyebrow twitch or, like, the blink of an eye.
It's like, well, how do you
do that?
And I
don't know if those are simpler than, like, the angel wings open up or not, but, like,
but then angel wings had the eyes.
But also the subtle acting of, like, a blink or, like, a questionable look from the character or, like, just small or a small, like, smile or something. Like, that, the acting in that was pretty amazing.
And that's, like, inspiring, too, to see
that.
But also
just to know that, like, the actor has to be inside the suit, and then another guy that's off-frame has to be, like, controlling, like, an eyebrow or something. Plus, they have to be, like, on time with, like, all the lines of, like, the human actors that might be on set. You know, like, that's pretty crazy to get everything timing wise right and the right hit the right emotion at all those moments. So that's why I feel like Hellboy 2, I mean, I honestly do not know where I was when this came out, because I never
saw
it.
You're watching The Dark Knight.
I was watching The Dark Knight, and I don't know, like, I feel like recently in the past, maybe all of this summer, I've been like discovering stuff from like 2007. I don't know what the deal is with that.
Well, it's an interesting time. It almost comes in the same with our work, with like our comic book work, is I feel like we're almost in the same world, storytelling world, as what like Del Toro is trying to do, where like everyone else, I feel like, is trying to be, I mean, and it's not bad, but like a lot of things are so serious, you know what I mean? And Black Magic Tales and all of our books, it's always been about like, dude, like, let's be strong with having fun and have, you know, in that adventure, you know what I mean? And not just like wear ourselves down about being super serious.
I think that's why I really liked Hellboy, because I saw Blade 2 and I thought it was a fine movie. There's, you know, it was a good movie, but I just didn't think it was for me. Like, it was too dark and there wasn't enough humor. And I don't know. I'm probably not going to see it again. And I fell asleep in the middle of it, and I didn't, like, care to say, like, Joe, stop it. You know, like, we need to watch it later. So, I don't know. I don't know how much of it I missed, because it could have been one of those sleeps that is only, like, a minute.
It's also
you
like,
know, like, and you don't like, know how it felt longer than a minute, but...
It's also vampires. Vampires have always been in that serious realm, except for when, you know, Joss Whedon does it, you know?
I'm not really too big on vampires, like, in general. I mean, I guess I like the Count Chocula or something. But like,
you Count Chocula.
Or like, who's the guy from Sesame Street, the Count?
Yeah.
Like, that guy's cool. But like, all the other vampires, I don't know if I can like get down with them.
I mean, I'm not sure what other... There's just Spike.
I mean, I guess Spike is cool, but I'm not a big vampire person. I like mummies better. Or like,
you like mummies better?
Yeah. Like, there's other creatures I like better than vampires.
Because isn't Del Toro trying to do Frankenstein next, too? Or he has one more than this, like, Frankenstein. That's why we were thinking about, like, is there going to be a Hellboy 3? And we saw, like, oh, there's... But he has so much on his plate. Because remember, Del Toro was once supposed to do The Hobbit, and that fell out because of... just because of delays, and he had other stuff he wanted to do. And then Pacific Rim. It's like, I really want to see a Hellboy 3.
Yeah, it felt like at the end of Hellboy 2, that's when that question arose... Like, it kind of felt like they opened the door for Hellboy 3, the ending.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, when's Hellboy 3? And so, you know, it's been 4 or 5 years, so I don't know. Maybe I...
It's going to be 8 years.
It's one of those things that it's like you never should never say never, though, because I'm sure he'd want to do it.
I bet, like, Ron Perlman's pretty badass. Like, it's taken this amount of time, I feel like, really he's always been badass, but, like, I feel like at this time, it's, like, really established that he's pretty freaking badass. He got his own spotlight also in Pacific Rim. You know, he's also in Sons of Anarchy, but it's just like...
he was also in Blade 2.
Yeah, it was Blade 2. I mean, I think he was almost like anything that any one of like anything that Del Toro can put him in, he's going to put him in there.
But I mean, I guess what I'm saying is with Hellboy 2, I don't know why I never got into it earlier. I don't know. I just, there's no explanation, but I'm glad that I got into it now. But I'm just saying, like, I think that it struck the right amount of humor and character design for me to find it enjoyable.
Also, I find that, like, it's almost better, I feel like, when you discover things pretty much on your own and, like, not when it's, like, shoved in your face.
Because how well did this film do when it was out? Did it just get overshadowed by Dark Knight?
Yeah.
Pretty much every film did that whole summer.
Yeah. I mean, it came out the week before Dark Knight, so, like, your second week is just, like, taken away.
Yeah, see, I don't even know why. I never knew about it.
That's probably why, because you're like, Heath Ledger, oh my god, he's dead. Ron Perlman's still alive, it's not the same.
I didn't even know who Ron Perlman was at that time.
Ron Perlman's one of those, they definitely have interesting faces.
I know, Ron Perlman's face, like, as a normal human looks like...
It's weird.
It looks like a Del Toro character.
Yeah.
Like, he has, like, one of those faces that looks like a stone, like Stonehenge.
Like, he looks like Eagle, what's his name?
Easter Island
face
looks like,
with hair.
Like that, who's that player in the basketball? Scottie Pippen.
He looks like Scottie Pippen?
He probably doesn't, actually, if you put them face to face. They probably look nothing alike. But I always called Scottie Pippen Easter Island Head. Because, like, he does. I think I should make a gallery of, like, interesting-looking people's heads.
I remember hearing about, like, how Del Toro would not do the movie without Ron Perlman. And it's, like, you look at it now, it's like, who else can do that role?
No one.
I really do appreciate...
He is Hellboy.
It's, like, really, like, after watching a lot of interviews with Del Toro after, like, Pacific Rim and, like... How basically, like, you know, he's only been doing stuff. He gets the full range, full freedom, complete freedom. And I think he's one of those guys that deserves to have that freedom because he actually is telling strong stories, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe it's just because I don't know. There's something how people won't give him a chance yet. Because I remember when he was doing The Hobbit, it was hard for that movie to get greenlit because of, I don't know, some would say there's a lot of other things, but... All I know is as soon as Peter Jackson got, like, signed himself on to direct, then it got greenlit, but not with Del Toro. And Del Toro's already working on it for 2 years, so it's maybe he's not in the public eye like that, but he's still a pure storyteller, which I think is great.
Yeah,
it's inspiring.
Well, why is he always getting, like, kind of shoved into the same, like, comparison as Peter Jackson?
Because they looked close. They both come from horror backgrounds.
And they know creatures.
And they know creatures, so you have that. And also, they're both not American. So it's like anything not American is just grouped in the same category.
Well, I still feel like...
Del Toro's part of the Three Amigos of Hollywood, though.
Who are the Three Amigos?
I know two of them. I don't remember the third one.
Who's
as well.
Who's the other one?
The other one is the guy who... I can't pronounce his name probably as well, but I probably should... It's the guy that directs. He did Tu Mamá También and what's that movie with Clive Owen? They had like all those super long takes. Was it something Children?
Children of Men.
Yeah, he did Children of Men, and also he comes out with Gravity. I really want to see Gravity when it comes out. It looks awesome.
You know what? I liked Children of Men. I thought it was a very dark movie.
It's freaking awesome though, too.
But I like
dark sci-fi.
But
good.
Dark and like it made you think. It wasn't just like being like dark to be dark. Like, oh, this is tough.
Yeah. So Del Toro is part of that world. You know. Not world, but like that. The Three Amigos
is
the same.
Have you seen that Y Mama También?
I haven't seen it yet. Do we own it?
No, I don't. But doesn't that have Antoine Chigurh in it?
Does it?
I think it does.
If it does, it's probably awesome.
It either has him or that other guy that's like... That... I don't know his name. Starts with like a G. Doesn't really help, but I don't have the internet in front of me or in my brain.
I guess we're going to have to check that out then.
But I don't quote me on that.
I remember Carlos saying how it was awesome. He's like, I've seen that. It's an awesome movie.
A lot of people say it's good, but I don't really know. Is it just like a like Spanish thing to be like, oh, it's good?
It's just like, a Spanish thing to say
like,
it's good?
Just, you know, just to like support that. You know?
Oh, it's Spanish, so it's got to be good. Not because I speak Spanish.
Well, you know, when it's like when one of the people comes forward, then... like all of them like it, you know, like with Jennifer Lopez, like all the like cholas are like, oh, we love J-Lo, like she like represents them all,
and yet she does not represent all of them.
Well, but you know how it is. I'm just saying, like, that's how like everybody kind of backs up whoever's part of like their thing.
Their representation.
They're like, you're just like me.
me.
Have you noticed that though? With like everything, and not just movies, but like different like types of, I don't know. It's not necessarily a race thing.
I specifically
but, like, different
love
types of people. Like they'll all back each other.
I love when that when that doesn't happen, and it's so obvious. Like, I doubt I see a lot of Filipinos or whatever going like, oh, Bruno Mars, oh, Kurt Hammett from Metallica, oh, Batista, you know, I never
see
them.
Yeah, but you've actually, like, seen people, like, at comic shows be like, oh, my God, you're Filipino, I'm Filipino, too, and now they connect, and you already have, like, an instant
just because
connection.
I wore that shirt that one time.
Seriously.
Yeah. Like, oh, I saw your shirt. The gold and black.
And so now, like, now you automatically connect just because of that. See? I think it's a true statement to say that.
I love that we had a whole episode basically about a movie that came out like 2008, but
well, there could
even
be
better.
People out there that never seen it. It's good. Go see Hellboy 2.
Logistically,
and then we're gonna watch Hellboy 1 hopefully this week.
What if Hellboy 1 is not as good? Because I always knew that Hellboy 2 was better because it's a sequel. It should be better.
Some sequels are not.
But you wanted to see the intro of Abe.
Yes, Abe. What do you think of Abe?
I like Abe. All their characters are well-balanced and very important. And that's what makes it a good team. No one was wasted. I hate when things go wasted. You need to have a callback. You need to have, like, if you show a gun in the first act, you gotta see it go off in the third act. That's the rule. I forget what that rule is called in writing. There's something law.
Payoff?
Yes. It's the payoff. But there was a cool name for it, though, that was given by some German dude, I think.
Like
something's law. Yeah.
You said that. I'll be back.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to the show. Let's throw you some advertising. Check out one-shots.com where you can check out my newest films, which are basically just like, you know, mini cinema in the palm of your hand. Also, check out Astray Productions. They're the guys, the awesome guys that produce this show for us every single week. AstrayProductions.com. And also go to goastray.tumblr.com where you can see news and updates and all that other good stuff of new work that I make, and also check out the production behind the scenes, anything of the new Taboo Girls 2014 calendar. What do you got, Carolyn?
Check out curls-studio.com for all the upcoming tour dates and comic news. We got it all there online at curls-studio.com. And thanks for talking about Hellboy 2 this week, Joe.
Oh, you're welcome.
Everybody go see it if you haven't already. And if you saw it like back a handful of years ago, might as well check it out again since Del Toro is in the news this summer with Pacific Rim.
This is what I'm always afraid of. And I always expect this all the time. And I feel like this is almost how people are these days. If you come at a person and you're just like, oh my God, this is the most coolest thing I've ever seen. You got to see it. I feel like there's something in people's minds.
They're
that
like, I'm not going to see it. I'm
no,
gonna hate
not,
it.
Not that, but something in people's minds triggered these days where they got to come back and be like, eh, it wasn't that great. But they didn't even like, you know, by just telling them that, they already want to be cooler than you by saying, oh, it wasn't that great, you know. And like, I just can't trust anybody. I don't know why that is. Maybe that's just me. But I always feel like there's something in people's back pocket where, like, you know what I can do? I can be better than this guy by saying the thing that he likes is a piece of crap. And that makes me cooler than him. Don't be like them, people. Just go there honestly and just go out there and just be honest, man. Don't be dishonest. Be honest. But don't be nice. Just be honest and be smart and be awesome to each other. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Send him home, Carolyn.
Adios, amigos.
We used to